Leaders are all around us at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Bill Clifton, president of the Clifton Group and a founding director of Prosper Waco. Hosting the conversation is Jim Haller, retired bank executive and longtime leader in the Waco community. This conversation was recorded June 14, 2016, in the KWBU studio.
Welcome to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Jim Haller, talking today with Bill Clifton, president of the Clifton Group and a founding director of Prosper Waco. Bill, I know how busy you are, so thank you so much for taking your time to come visit with us today.
Oh, I'm honored that somebody asked.
Well, we are delighted. There's so much to talk about with what you've meant to Waco. Your past background is very, very interesting. So we've got a lot of things to cover here today. But I'd like for you to start out by telling our listeners about your family background, growing up in Waco, et cetera.
Well, I do have significant family roots in Waco, and I was born in Waco. And I really attended Waco schools until I went off to prep school for the 9th through the 12th grade, and that was at Culver in Indiana. I had relatives on both sides of my family that attended there, and so we had a lot of history there, and I always kind of thought I would go there, but I wasn't sure until I actually made that decision. Subsequent to that, I lived outside of Waco for college and for service in the armed services. And then actually 2 years working for our family business in Austin in a division we had down there. But other than that, I've really always lived in Waco, and I've always voted in Waco.
Well, I know you have to take a lot of pride in your college education. And I know you went to Duke, went to MIT. Tell us about that experience and how that sort of shaped your philosophy and your future.
Well, I enjoyed every school that I went to, and that includes going to Sanger Avenue with Ms. Nina B. Glass, that I think a number of my generation had the privilege of really observing. And you talk about leadership, and you know she's one of the original ones in my life. But my prep school education was challenging, as was Duke and MIT. I quite frankly didn't study all that much at Duke. I have trouble convincing my wife that one semester I took 21 hours because that's just not what was, you know, done for our kids and in the current generation. Mm-hmm. But I did really study at MIT. We took Fridays off and always did something fun on Fridays, but the other 6 days we studied. So I had the advantage in that I have a quantitative bent and I test well, and it really helps to test well to get into those kind of schools.
Well, we know that has obviously been a big part of developing who you are today, but I know that your mom and dad were such significant contributors to Waco in past years. And tell us a little bit about growing up in your family and what was expected of you as a youngster and then for the future.
Well, both my dad and my mom were great role models. And they also, in addition to doing all the things in the family business and within our family, I think they certainly did a lot in the community. The Meals on Wheels kitchen is named after my mom because she spent many, many hours working for them. She was a key person in action planning, which was a part of United Way years ago. And my dad held the positions that you would expect for a business leader in the community, like President of the United Way and the Chamber, like you, Jim, and myself have served in subsequently.
You, after college, I know you served in the U.S. Air Force. Obviously, everybody indebted for that. But tell us a little bit about the experience. You finished as a captain in the Air Force. What did that do to shape you? And tell us a little bit about what you did in the service.
Well, what I did in the service was not very exciting. I flew a desk in the United States Air Force, and I served during the Vietnam era, but I never did leave the country. But obviously had a bunch of comrades that did, and I prepared a number of them through my supply officer function at Little Rock Air Force Base, which is where I spent the bulk of my time.
Okay, we're going to leave the Air Force. You then come back, join your family business, where I knew you had worked there through latter part of high school or what summers and et cetera. Barron's Incorporated, widely known across the country as a great pharmaceutical company. Tell us a little bit about that history and how you and your family grew that to be a big, big player.
Well, I'll start with the end first, and that is we ultimately sold the company in 1994, and at the time we sold it, it was 116 years old. My family became involved, my ancestors, at the turn of the century, and I'm going to talk about the turn of the century like when we went into the 1900s. And over time, they just accumulated more and more stock to where when we sold the company, we had we owned all of the company. It was a wholesale distribution firm, and our customers were basically independent pharmacists, which are salt-of-the-earth type people, respected in their community and really treated like doctors in that era, and in most cases, leaders of their community. We serviced mostly the rural areas rather than the urban areas. We covered much of Texas and eastern New Mexico. And quite frankly, the reason we elected to sell, we weren't actively trying to shop the company, but this industry is controlled by three players now, and they were assimilating folks like us, and a couple of them made a bid for us, and we sold not because we wanted to be a part of a big entity, but because we could see the struggles that the independent pharmacists were having, and it's kind of like where Walmart has taken a lot of the mom and pops out of business in our generation, and we could just see the handwriting on the wall.
Well, if I recall, you and your family sold the business in the late 1990s. I believe that's correct. About that time, you were starting your community leadership with Chamber of Commerce, Business League. But there's one area that I remember you being so important in, and that was the Big 12 Task Force that started at the time of the beginning of the Big 12. It's hard for us to believe that conference is now 20 years old, but tell us some of your remembrances of getting that started here in Waco and all the things we had to do to prepare.
Well, the year that I was president of the Chamber of Commerce, I really had three things that we were working on. One of them was a workforce issue, which continues to this day because we always have challenges in providing an adequate workforce for the many varied needs of the potential folks that want to invest in our community or expand in our community. The second area had to do with economic development, and I work on that still today because Bob Sheehy was commissioned the community to participate in the 2020 Vision Program. And I think there were nine committees. I was asked to co-chair the economic development portion. And so that was the second area that we were working on. And the third area is the one you're talking about, which is the Big 12, because we were making the transition. It was the time that Robert Sloan was coming in. And a couple of us realized that Robert didn't have a lot of experience in the business area or working with the community. So there were three of us that had a series of meetings with Robert, each of which lasted at least 2.5 hours, trying to explain to him how the community worked. And I really think the genesis of Baylor and Waco working together in a much more open fashion began with that, with some of the steps that Robert took. We also established a Big 12 task force, which played an important role in showing the businesses in our community, because we had about 1,200 members of the chamber at that time, showing those businesses that this move into the Big 12 was important and something we needed to latch on to and figure out not only how to market and profit from, but make sure that, you know, Baylor and the Big 12 grew and prospered.
What do you remember most over these last 20 years that the Big 12 has meant to Waco, not obviously just to Baylor, but to our community? What has it done overall, would you say?
I guess if I had to sum it up in one word, it'd be branding, because, you know, Waco for a number of years was kind of a stop in the road between the Metroplex and Austin, where people stopped to get gas and fill up their cars or fill up their stomachs. And now it is much more of a destination city. We're not where we need to be, but we've moved a long way down the road. You can't drive up and down the interstate without seeing McLean Stadium. And that's emblematic of what I'm talking about. And it's one reason why I think we need to spend money in things like advertising supplements in Texas Monthly and talking about the good things we do here to invite people to come and visit. And when we have enough things to come and visit to where they spend a night, that's when we can call ourselves a destination city.
For those of you who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Jim Haller, talking today with Bill Clifton, president of the Clifton Group and a founding director of Prosper Waco. Bill, as I mentioned earlier on in this conversation, you have been involved in so many different segments of making our community better. I'm going to want to talk about quite a few of those. Recently, we had Roland Gertz, who's the head of the old, as we knew it, Family Practice Center. You were a longtime chair of the Heart of Texas Community Health Center. Tell us about that experience and how much that has helped our community and our region.
One of the things that you learn being involved in civic activities is the interrelationship between what are now the three subgroups of, Prosper Waco, education and health and financial security. And it's very difficult to look at any one of the individual work areas or projects within those three groups and not see the interrelationships to the other two. They're just so intertwined that to work on them individually or separately is just not effective. And one of the things that really brought there's several things that brought Prosper Waco to fruition. I mean, first and foremost has to be Virginia Dupuy's commitment to education. I think there were many things that she learned and actually leadership principles that she instilled in our community during her service as mayor. But the thing she left with, the passion she left with, was a passion for education and the importance of education at all levels of life. It's certainly very important in shaping individuals under the age of five. But I'm 69 now, and I read a lot, and I still try to educate myself on a number of different areas. So education is a lifelong experience. And Virginia's commitment to doing something about education after she left her terms as mayor was really the genesis of Prosper Waco. And the other contributing factor in my mind was you have to have either a mentor or somebody that will carry the flag. And we had that in Malcolm Duncan Jr. He decided that he really wanted to do something about poverty. And I know that a lot of times when you talk about addressing poverty or you look back in the Lyndon Baines Johnson years, the war on poverty, you roll your eyes and think, boy, how much money and how many dollars have we spent and what have we really accomplished? And so that basically means that there hasn't been as much success as was envisioned in the beginning. But Malcolm and Virginia and others of us working on this as a startup had two things that really kind of drove us that we thought maybe we can do something a little different. One was using metrics, and this is a word you've heard Malcolm use many, many times, and it has to do with accountability. There are many of us that have given a lot of dollars charitably or worked for charitable organizations, and they do good things. But when we finish the end of the year, we're not really sure what our dollars or our labor have brought us. Have they moved the needle? Have we achieved a goal? Have we at least done a little something so we're better off? And we've never been good at measuring that. We think with increased metrics where people define goals better and then measure performance so that they don't continue doing things that don't work, then try new things with the dollars and the time that are available is a better way to build the mousetrap. The other thing that Prosper Waco is doing that is different is it's basically a bottoms-up organization. It's taken great pains to take all the people that work in all these social service areas, get them together so that there's not duplication of effort. And we all know that the sum of the parts is greater than the whole. And if you get people from education, health, and financial security areas working together on a joint problem, I bet you're going to do a better job and go a longer way towards solving the many disparate issues of poverty than we've done in the past.
Well, how would you characterize the 9 years you spent as chair of the Family Practice Center and the role they're playing with the poverty issue and tying that in with Prosper Waco?
Well, the basic needs of, you know, food and shelter and health are most important, because you can't be a good tax-paying citizen and hold a job if you don't have those things taken care of at the very basis. Family Practice, or the Family Health Center, was really originated in the late 50s, early 60s to meet two needs. One was the minority community basically let the city fathers that were running the community at the time know that the health care needs of their populations were not being met, and that that was, to them, the most important thing that needed to be met. And you need to remember those times were where riots were occurring in much of the United States because of unrest, and it was being demonstrated with civil unrest. And we didn't want that in this community, and I say we loosely there because I wasn't part of the city fathers at that time. But this is what the minority community told the city fathers. So it was very important. It was high on the priority list to do something in this area. The other thing is the generation of doctors that was serving the entire population was retiring, and we weren't seeing replacements. So we now have 36 residents that were always training at the Family Practice Center. So it's really those two issues, and it's gotten to where we now have 13 different locations where you can receive services. Last year, there were 58,000 unduplicated citizens in McLennan County that were served, and they were served somewhere around 240,000 times. That's that many visits. And so I don't know what we would do without the entity now. And quite frankly, we need to expand more, but there's such a political problem in Texas with a significant political block opposed to expanding Medicaid and taking the government dollars that are available under Obamacare that, that hole still exists and those folks are not getting served.
Well, thank you for enlightening us on all of that, because certainly we know that's a big part of the development of our community away from this poverty struggle we face. I want to jump to your time back in 1995. You were chairman of the Greater Waco Chamber of Commerce Board. Also, about that time, you were president of the Business League. That's been slightly over 20 years ago now. Tell me what the biggest difference you see between Waco then and Waco today.
I think the biggest difference is we have more folks that are paddling in the same direction now. In my view, we have a closer partnership between the public and the private sector, and we just have more people that are involved, and this would include Baylor. Baylor's always been an important part of the community, but they've kind of been, as I was growing up, a separate part of the community. Now, every week when I look in the newspaper early in the week, there's a list of seven or eight activities that the local community's invited to participate. That's one way. It's obvious that they're trying to join hands and realize that Waco is Baylor and Baylor is Waco. And so I would say the partnership and people rowing in the same direction is the greatest difference that I see.
Moving on from your activity that was so great with the Chamber and the Business League, for a long time now, you've been an integral part of the what we call WEDMEC, the Waco-McLennan County Economic Development Corporation, and the Waco Industrial Foundation. I'm going to have several questions about this, but distinguish for our listeners the difference between those two entities.
The Waco Industrial Foundation was also founded in the 50s, and basically it's a group of business folks that have inventoried, hold an inventory of land to make it easier for potential investors, whether it's local folks that want to expand or people from outside the community come and invest in our community and build a plant. When I was head of the chamber, we kind of had what I would call a philosophy of bait and switch. And that was, we had several spec buildings, and this was not really a conscious effort of bait and switch. It's just the way it worked out. These buildings would attract folks from out of town to come. They would see us, and then they'd see all the other amenities. I mean, we have a great advantage because we're located on I-35. We have a great advantage because we have water available. And obviously, that's one of the reasons, a key reason we got M&M Mars in the first place, is because of our availability of water. We have a workforce that has a history of a good work ethic. All those things help us. And so when we get somebody here and we can show them a building that's nice, but maybe not exactly what they want, then they see green space and decide to build their own building. And that happened countless times. That's what the Industrial Foundation has always done, is hold inventory of land. And we have always had about 2,000 acres. WEDMEC is an outgrowth of the economic development plan that I alluded to earlier in Bob Sheehy's Vision 2020. There were nine of those committees. I co-chaired one of them. We had a really good group of folks. We met for about 7 or 8 months, and we had our last meeting. We were going to approve the plan. It had about 115 suggestions for the city council to consider. And somebody made the comment, what's going to keep this plan from gathering dust on a shelf? We decided then to meet another 2 months, and we came up with a suggested plan that basically now is WEDMEC, the Waco-McLennan County Economic Development Corporation, which is comprised of a representative from the county. It's usually been, or it's always been, the county judge, a representative from the city. It's usually been the city manager, but occasionally it's been the mayor, and a representative from the Waco Industrial Foundation. Since its inception, I've always been the representative from the Waco Industrial Foundation, although I submit my name every 2 years when we have a new chair and let them decide if they want me to continue in that. Every time, and this has happened probably about 4 dozen times now, that we have a prospect that's ready to invest in our community, we make a recommendation based on an economic model about what incentives we want to provide to get that business to either expand or come to our community. Every time except one, that has been ratified by the city and the county. And so we have a pretty good track record, and that's just the way that we handle economic development. And the chamber does all the staff work, and they're compensated for that from the city and the county budgets.
For those who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Jim Haller, talking today with Bill Clifton, president of the Clifton Group and a founding director of Prosper Waco. Bill, we've talked so much so far about your great leadership skills and all the different positions you've held during your business career and on. How could you or would you describe to our listeners what your leadership style really is?
I think there's several kinds of leadership, active and passive, and I think you definitely have to put me in the passive type. I like to listen to my peers and then try to help structure ways for them to address and solve problems. And so I think, you know, that kind of describes how I act. I run into people in the community that find out by talking to me that I know about or have been involved in stuff, and they didn't know it because a lot of what I do is behind the scenes. And I'm happy with that and satisfied with that because I think I've helped some groups make some progress, and that's where you get the satisfaction doing community work.
Well, it's obvious to our listeners and has been for a long time to me, you're a very, very driven person. You're intense about everything you do. I'm always curious, what do you do in your life to relieve stress? What are your hobbies? What do you do to get away from the pressures of your duties?
Well, the main thing that I do is I've been involved in buying and racing and occasionally breeding thoroughbred racehorses, quarter horses at the outset. And I've, like I've mentioned, I've done that for, I guess, 40-some-odd years now.
Can you tell us about some of your successes? I've always been impressed, and I'm sure our listeners would be also.
Well, I've had three horses that have gotten to the top of the thoroughbred pole at one time or another in their career, and had the opportunity to race in other countries, particularly Canada, but also Japan and Dubai. And I guess probably my one of my favorite races was running second in the world's richest horse race. And we lost to Sheikh Mohammed's, the best horse he ever had in his life. And so I think we had a good effort. We just weren't good enough to beat Sheikh Mohammed that day. But we've won both the signature races at Saratoga, which I'm very proud of, and the older horse race, the Whitney. We've won twice. The Travers, we won once. And then, in addition, both of those races, we've lost by a nose. So my best successes, I guess, have been at Saratoga.
Haven't you also had horses in the Breeders' Cup?
Yes. Matter of fact, I had the favorite in the Breeders' Cup Classic one year, but we ran seventh. So it was fun until we opened the gates. That's like horse, by the way, was named Barons.
Oh, that's cool. What else do you do? What do you have? What are your hobbies? You've obviously racing, as big as you're into it, that's kind of a business too. But what are your other stress releases in life?
Well, I'll be playing tennis this afternoon. I have a weekly game that started when I moved back to Waco. Obviously, the participants have changed over the years. And matter of fact, we're in a building now with Ross Sams' building, and Ross has played in that group at over the life of the group at times. And so I do that. I do play golf, but I really only play when I go to nice places. So I don't really keep up with that. And I do read a lot, and reading takes time, but I enjoy it. I've been to a fishing lodge to trout fish approximately 40 times, both with my parents and now with my boys and my wife, Laura, in Creed, Colorado. So those would be the main things.
Well, I know you're proud of your family. You just mentioned Laura. Tell us quickly about your two sons you're so proud of.
We have two boys. The older got his degree in biomedical engineering, went to medical school at Baylor down in Houston, and now works for what I lovingly refer to as a broke startup, because they raise money every 6 months. They're in the medical device field, and they're trying to develop a heart pump. My youngest son is Chris, and Chris has been involved in a number of different endeavors. Recently, with friends, built a self-storage unit. He's worked as a landman and briefly in the securities business, and just does a number of different things and likes to work outside.
Well, Bill, it's been a real delight to have you on today. I wish we could talk more. There's so many things to talk about your successes in the past, but just from me personally, I've always admired what you've done for our community, and I thank you for that, and I thank you for joining us here today on KWBU.
Well, you're welcome. It was an honor to be here.
This program was recorded June 14th, 2016, in the KWBU studio. This and past episodes of the Central Texas Leadership Series can be found online at kwbu.org.